This is Naima Novetsky from AlaTorah.org. Today we'll compare and contrast several commentators' takes on Moshe's leadership skills as we explore Shmot chapter 18 and the question of why Moshe was in need of Yitro's advice. The chapter describes an all too familiar situation. You go to a government office. There are interminably long lines. You wait and wait, slowly inching forward, wondering what is taking so long. As you get closer to the front, you see the problem. There's only one clerk available to deal with all the people. And you think to yourself, there must be a more efficient way of doing this. Why don't they just hire another employee? So too, in Shmot chapter 18, the children of Israel find themselves waiting online all day long to approach Moshe for judgment. Yitro watches the scene from the sidelines, realizes that the situation is unbearable, and makes the rather obvious suggestion that Moshe appoint other judges to assist with the workload. We are then told that Moshe implements Yitro's advice, and Yitro departs having accomplished his objective. Yitro's advice seems like such an obvious and simple solution that one cannot help but wonder, how could it be that Moshe, the greatest of all men and in possession of a direct line to Hashem, needed Yitro's help to figure this out? As Abarbanel, a 15th century Portuguese and Spanish commentator, aptly formulates in his fifth question on our chapter. And the fifth question concerns the advice of Yitro to Moshe regarding the appointment of judges. For Yitro's words were proper and correct, but the slightest of individuals could recognize that it was a poor idea to have one individual stand from morning to night to judge, and that in so doing both the judge and the judged would tire. And how could Moshe Rabbeinu and all the elders of Israel not realize on their own that if they appointed other judges, it would lighten the burden? The Akidat Yitzchak, Abarbanel's older contemporary, further notes that in thinking about our question, the reader is caught in something of a catch-22. If Yitro's plan was an obvious and appropriate corrective for a difficult situation, then Moshe looks foolish for not solving the problem on his own. On the other hand, if Yitro's plan was unhelpful, why did Moshe implement it at all? In exploring the issue, it's worth addressing two other questions that emerge from our chapter, both questions of chronology. First, when did Yitro proffer this advice, before or after Matan Torah? The chapter is placed before the description of the revelation at Sinai, yet Moshe tells Yitro that he's teaching the nation Hashem's statutes and laws, which would suggest that the Decalogue and accompanying laws had already been relayed. The question of whether or not a corpus of civic law was already in place when Moshe judged the people plays a significant role in how one evaluates why Moshe did not appoint helpers on his own. Second, when did Moshe implement Yitro's advice? Was it immediately, as a literal reading of the narrative might suggest, or only later on? Dvarim chapter 1 recounts a story parallel to ours, in which Moshe speaks of his appointing of heads of tens and hundreds to aid him as judges. Yet this account implies that it happened in the second year. If the story mentioned in Dvarim is identical to ours, does this suggest that Moshe first acted on Yitro's advice only in the second year? If so, why did he wait? Commentators explore these questions, debating what our story teaches about the administrative skills of both Moshe and Yitro. At the heart of the debate lies not simply questions of text, but the much more fundamental question of how to view our leaders. Must one view Moshe as an impeccable leader in both spiritual and mundane matters? Or can one suggest that he was perhaps less than perfect and potentially flawed or lacking in managerial skills? Rabag, a 13th to 14th century Provençal commentator, takes the latter approach, suggesting that Moshe did indeed lack certain management skills and insights that Yitro was able to provide. Rabag portrays Moshe as an ivory tower figure whose great spirituality and closeness to Hashem caused him to make errors of judgment in mundane matters. This is consistent with Rabag's general tendency to acknowledge Moshe's imperfections and to attribute them to his great spirituality. Thus, for example, he similarly suggests that Moshe's speech impediment was not a physical disability, but a social one. Moshe had difficulty organizing his speech in a manner that was readily comprehensible to others due to the tremendous amount of time he spent getting close to Hashem, outside of human company. According to Rabag, Yitro arrived and offered his advice only in the second year, by which point in time civil laws had already been given, and Moshe would have already had ample opportunity to put a judicial system into place. For Rabag, This magnifies Moshe's administrative shortcomings, and it highlights that Moshe did not think of Yitro's advice on his own. It's important to note, though, that Rabbah tempers this critique of Moshe with strong praise, lauding Moshe's wisdom and the completeness of his personality, presenting his willingness to listen to advice and correct his actions as a shining example to be emulated. Nonetheless, Rabbah's critique of Moshe aroused the ire of Abarbanel, who heatedly disputes Rabbah's claims, going even so far as to call them a lie. He writes, "Many have already spoken much about this matter, against the master of prophets, suggesting that he was lacking in civic leadership. And this is a lie, for the perfection of his ways demonstrates his knowledge of them. And how could it be that Hashem did not teach him this basic wisdom and understanding?" Thus, in contrast to Rabbah, Abarbanel maintains that Moshe's system was actually the best option for the time being, and that Yitro's advice, though well-intentioned, was both unnecessary and mistaken. He claims that Moshe had already thought of the idea of delegating responsibilities on his own and had waited to implement the idea only because it was not yet viable. Since the nation had not yet received the body of civil law outlined in Parashat Mishpatim, Moshe needed to wait until after receiving the Torah to entrust cases to other judges. Without such a law code, these judges on their own would never have known the proper law desired by God. Yitro, being unaware of the imminence of revelation, erroneously assumed that Moshe was planning on continuing in the role of sole judge indefinitely. As such, he recommended that Moshe should appoint judges who would render verdicts based on their own common sense. Consequently, Abarbanel concludes that Yitro's advice was both ill-timed and reflective of a Midianite model of justice rather than a divine one. According to Abarbanel, in contrast to Rabbah, Yitro arrived and offered his advice in the first year, but Moshe first appointed the judges in the second. He emphasizes that this implementation would have taken place regardless of Yitro's advice. In addition, it differed from Yitro's suggestion in several important aspects, highlighting how Moshe's wisdom and his own plan surpassed that of Yitro. Abarbanel suggests that this is why Moshe does not even credit Yitro for his suggestion when he retells the story in Devarim chapter 1. One might still wonder, though, why in our chapter, not only is the idea presented as solely Yitro's, but the text emphasizes how Moshe fulfilled it to the letter. Abarbanel responds that this merely reflects Moshe's desire to honor his father-in-law. However, if so, we would have expected him to reference Yitro in Devarim as well. Rabbah and Abarbanel's readings of the character of Moshe are thus diametrically opposed to each other. We wonder why is one so much more willing to see a flawed Moshe than the other? It's possible that the different portraits are actually somewhat autobiographical. Abarbanel, who spent much of his life in a diplomatic and political role, being a minister in both Portugal and Spain, was probably inclined to assume that Moshe also was skilled in these areas. Little information is known about Rabbah's life, but some of his works give an impression that the author was more of an ivory tower scholar than a person engaged with the masses. With this, we move to one last approach, a reading which attempts to chart a middle ground and to portray both Moshe and Yitro in a positive light. Rav Yitzchak Arama, the Akidat Yitzchak, proceeds Abarbanel in suggesting that Moshe needed to judge all disputes on his own because the Torah and the corpus of civic law had not yet been given. Under these circumstances, no one trusted that anyone but Moshe could do a fair and wise job. And as such, there's no fault to be found in Moshe's leadership. He was simply doing the best he could with the hand that God had dealt him. In contrast to Abarbanel, though, the Akidat Yitzchak portrays Yitro as giving Moshe sound advice, which Moshe on his own had not thought of. Yitro, like Moshe, recognized that an effective judiciary needs a corpus of law, and that if every individual judge decided on his own what was right, chaos might reign. As such, he went to the root of the problem and proposed that the nation receive a divine civil law code. Such a code would ensure that no one could dispute the justness of the law, and all would know how to rule. Rav Arama reads this into both Yitro's opening words, Shema Bekoli, Iyatzacha V'hi Elokim Imach, listen to my words and may Hashem be with you, and also his closing statement, Imet Hadavar Hazeh Ta'aseh, V'tzivacha Elokim V'yacholta Amod. If this matter you do, and God command you, you will be able to endure. Yitro tells Moshe, if Hashem is with you, meaning, If Hashem commands you and provides you with a divine code of law, then your problem will be solved. The Akedat Yitzchak suggests that until Yitro's advice, Moshe did not realize that Hashem was planning on bequeathing a divine code of civil law, and that Yitro was the first to conceive of this concept and recognize its desirability. While at first blush, this approach might be difficult to digest, in truth, the Torah was the first corpus to combine ritual prescriptions with civil legislation. All other ancient Near Eastern codes of civil law were established by the king and were separate from matters of religious worship. Thus, Rav Arama asserts that it was not at all inconceivable that Moshe might have originally thought that in civil matters, the nation would conduct themselves like all other nations, i.e., that there would be a separation of church and state. Cognizant of the novelty of his approach, Rav Arama points to parallel cases where Torah laws are given as a result of new circumstances, such as the need for Pesach Sheni or the inheritance of daughters. In these cases, too, it appears that Moshe had previously been unaware of the need to institute the laws, and that it was only in the aftermath of a specific request that the law was instituted. Thus, in contrast to both Rabag and Abarbanel, according to the Akedat Yitzchak, both Moshe and Yitro are capable leaders possessing administrative competence and leadership skills. Yitro's advice was innovative and solid, which is why Moshe implemented it as given. The fact that Moshe needed Yitro's counsel does not take away from Moshe's leadership. In fact, his willingness to listen to good advice is itself a sign of Moshe's wisdom. To summarize, we have seen three differing evaluations of both Moshe and Yitro. Rabag paints Moshe as less than perfect, viewing his high spiritual state as hindering his interactions in the interpersonal and in administrative spheres. Abarbanel, in contrast, prefers to view Moshe as an unflawed leader, leading him in turn to read Yitro as perhaps well-intentioned, but not particularly helpful. Finally, the Akedat Yitzchak sees both Moshe and his father-in-law as competent and skilled administrators. Which of the various portraits do you find most compelling? For more on this topic and many other topics related to Parashat Yitro, please visit alatorah.org.